95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Good morning and welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. Jennifer Lynn Robinson is the founder and CEO of Purposeful Networking. Her expertise is in strategic networking, communications, public speaking, and workplace relations. She also did a TEDx speech on resilience and change. Jennifer is joining me today to share her story. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for coming on. We've seen each other at so many different events, but I really don't know you. So just tell me a little bit about who you are.
Yes. So I started my career as a litigator, a trial lawyer, for about 11 years. And unfortunately, at that point, I had a near-death accident that took me out of doing my litigation work. And I started a business a few years later called Purposeful Networking, as you mentioned, that I've been doing for about 10 years. And I do speaking and consulting. So I go into companies, firms, conferences, and I do workshops, keynotes and different presentations. And then I also have some private clients that I help with marketing, networking, social media, public speaking, and that sort of thing. Right now I'm living in Haverford. My husband and I moved during COVID and we don't have kids, but we have two dogs, Jake and Lily, that we treat like kids, and happy to have moved and have a different change of life post-COVID.
Do you talk about your accident?
I do. Actually, the heart of my TEDx talk that you mentioned. I didn't initially. You know, it took a number of years, I think, to have some perspective and really be able to talk about it. But I do talk about it because I feel like there was a lot of things I learned about being given a second chance and that I now share in my speaking. So some of the speaking I do now is more around resilience, change, and leadership. And the TEDx talk specifically talked a little bit about my personal story and then the ways that I was able to overcome everything I went through for a number of years and how people can use that to overcome other obstacles that they have.
So what was the near-death experience?
So I was a pedestrian on the University of Pennsylvania campus, and I got hit and pinned underneath a truck, and I almost died.
Wow. Did you spend time in the hospital? How long were you there?
I did. Thank God I was a block from the ICU at HUP, you know, University of Pennsylvania Hospital, which is level travel one. So that was very helpful in my treatment. And I was there for a week. I had one very complex surgery while I was there that week. And then I had something called Penn Care at Home come in and help me for several months until they felt I was well enough to go to outpatient rehab. And then I went to Bryn Mawr Rehab in Malvern for physical, vestibular, cognitive, and speech therapy, and a place called ReMed in Paoli that dealt with people who were dealing with traumatic brain injuries and head trauma. And I would say for at least a good several years after that, I had a number of surgeries. I probably saw, no exaggeration, between 20 and 30 specialists. I suffered from very serious physical injuries and a number of surgeries, as I said. And then additionally, PTSD, anxiety, depression, anger. The accident was obviously what took me out of doing trial work. I couldn't remember my cases anymore. I couldn't be in rooms with multiple stimulus. I couldn't find words. It was a very, very difficult time. And, you know, on top of all of that, I was a newlywed. So my poor husband, you know, I went from being totally independent to him having to help dress me, wash my hair. I couldn't drive. I lost my license because of the head injury, and I had to go through the testing to get it back eventually. So it was an entire change of life in an instant.
Do you have any lasting side effects?
I do. I mean, I have some chronic injuries physically that I live with. Additionally, you know, I would say that anybody in that kind of therapy will tell you that you do learn compensation strategies, and clearly I'm doing a ton better than when this first happened many years ago. But I don't process things in the same way that I did, and it is a struggle for me. And a lot of times I still, like many of us, overschedule myself, even though I run my own business. And, you know, my husband's probably the one in my life who's always telling me things like, this is your business, and the fact that you're overscheduled and you're taxing your brain like this when you know that's not healthy for you, you have control over that and you need to do better. So that's definitely something that's a consideration. I'm able to do the things I want to do, but it's definitely different. And I have to be very cognizant of having downtime and not being too taxing, you know, on what I'm trying to do.
Could you have gone back into the courtroom? Was it your decision to stay with Purposeful Networking, or did you have to?
So at the time that I started the business, I could not have gone back into the courtroom because of the issues that I mentioned. And also all my doctors didn't allow me to go back and do that kind of work anyway. I would say over the years, certainly now, I could go back to the courtroom. At the time, I was probably carrying between 100 and 150 cases at a time. And I don't know how realistic that would be for me right now because I'm able to pick and choose when I work and what clients I have and what speaking engagements I have. So I think that part might be a little much for me. But as far as remembering things and being able to speak on my feet and everything that I do now as a speaker and a consultant. I would be able to go back to it now, but I really do love what I'm doing. You know, I'm helping so many people. It's a much happier place to be in because, you know, doing litigation work, I mean, you're with people that are contentious and kind of fighting a lot of the time. I worked in-house for insurance companies. It was interesting work, but it was also not so rewarding at the end of the day. And I feel like now I really get to see firsthand helping people in the ways that they are able to market themselves, gain confidence and leadership skills and everything that I do. I feel like it's very helpful and it gives me a big sense of reward that I didn't necessarily have. I would say the only thing I really miss is kind of that competition aspect, you know, of doing a good closing argument and being in front of a jury.
Talk a little more about purposeful networking and exactly what you offer, what your workshops are like.
Yes. So purposeful networking, I do speaking and I also do consulting. So as far as speaking, I'll go into law firms, conferences, companies, and I talk about change and leadership, resilience. I help people with their networking skills, their personal networking skills, you know, networking at conferences, LinkedIn networking, gender-specific networking, how men and women can be allies for each other. I help with signature talks and being more comfortable with public speaking, overcoming challenges. So it's a variety of things I offer. It can range from a short talk to half-day workshops. And then on the consulting side, I help people with, again, their LinkedIn, you know, whether they have no confidence with their networking or a lack of confidence. I have a client tomorrow I'm helping with that. She has a networking conference next week, and she asked if I could just help her with some tips before that. You know, I help with social media strategy. I can help with website content, you know, as far as strategy of engagement, employee engagement. So it really runs the gamut of a number of things. I would say since COVID, my most popular program has been how to be a more resilient leader and also talking about presenting yourself in the virtual space. So how do you do this online networking in this hybrid world where a lot of people haven't gone back at all? How do you stay visible? How do you navigate it? How do you still build relationships, maintain relationships? And a lot for people who are job hunting, how do you present yourself online? Because that's still a struggle, even though we're a few years into kind of the Zoom world. How do you present yourself when you're not meeting people in person, can't show your personality, and kind of make those face-to-face connections? So there's definitely a lot of things people can do to help them with that.
Talk about your motivational speaking. Give me a little bit about what you talk about.
So, like I said, I think the most popular one right now is probably how to be a more resilient leader. And it definitely goes around the themes of my TEDx talks. Since I went through the accident that I mentioned, I had a lot of years where I had to overcome a lot, and I'm very open about it. So I mentioned some of the things, but it's hard, I think, for people to be vulnerable, especially as leaders. So when you talk about your story and where you came from and how you needed 6 years of therapy and you were addicted to pain pills and you were at a very low point and had anger management issues, and a lot of the things that I discuss, I think that you give people more of free rein to talk about that with each other and with you and to learn from it. And it doesn't have to be something as crazy as the accident I was involved in. And, you know, people go through things every day, you know, divorce, death, job loss. COVID was a great example of that. And I think that's why that talk has become so popular. Lives changed in an instant. Now, that's something I was accustomed to having been through what I went through. But I think for a lot of people, that was extremely challenging to just kind of have the rug pulled out from under you in every aspect of your life when, you know, one day the country just shut down. So I really talk about the things that I used to overcome it. Some of that was finding stuff that brought me joy. You know, for me, that was boxing. I got very involved in boxing.
Really?
So, you know, and sometimes when I talk, you know, I talk about, you know, the joy of starting my day hitting things. And I'm not sure what it says about me, but, you know, everybody needs their outlet, right? So, you know, finding joy, finding connection, you know, regaining connection, I guess I should say. I would say before my accident, I was very outgoing. I was involved in a lot of things. And then after the accident, I became very isolated and angry and depressed. And just the power of connection and how that can play such a role in not only bringing me out of what I went through, but for everybody going through things. The more isolated, the more you can become depressed, and the more isolated kind of builds on itself. So things like that, and getting involved with volunteer efforts, finding purpose in your life, and getting rid of naysayers in your life, right? So that's a big one. I mean, not everyone on the path that you're on. When I started my business, not everyone was on the path with me. Oh, well, why aren't you going back to litigation? Why would you give that up? What makes you qualified to start a business? And what do you know about what you're doing? There were some people that just weren't on the journey with me. And sometimes it's people very close to you, friends and family. Really figuring out who you want around you for that next step in your journey, I think, can be very empowering as far as recovery.
So your speaking, your motivational speaking and the Purposeful Network was born from your accident, right?
Absolutely. I never had any plans to leave the legal profession. I never had any plans to start a business. From the business operations side, I never had any skills to run a business. So yes, that was absolutely born out of that. So actually, at the time I had the accident, when I was going through all the therapy, it was suggested that I reconsider a career that involved public speaking. And I think I just took that as a personal challenge because it was something that I really enjoyed. And I don't like a lot of people being told no or I can't. So I started the business doing consulting because I really wasn't well enough to do the speaking anymore, and grew it into more of a public speaking business over the years. And for me, the TEDx was kind of the culmination of that. I tried for 5 years to get a TEDx talk and was rejected, and just visualized myself on that TEDx stage. And it ended up, you know, I should put stage in quotes, because it ended up that I was supposed to give the TEDx talk the week the country shut down. So even that did not look like what I thought it would. But I think that's also an important lesson to learn. You have goals. They don't always happen in the time frame that you want or the way that you want, but it doesn't mean that you can't meet them. And for me, that was really the culmination of proving to myself and everybody that I can do public speaking and I can be on a stage and have a greater platform and share my message and help people.
Tell me about the TEDx experience, because there's one thing about public speaking, but a TEDx is a bit different.
It was very challenging. Yes, it was totally different animal. And I probably wrote and rewrote the talk at least 5 or 6 times. You have a coach, you have people that are helping you. And it really is kind of this process where even after you get it, it's kind of breaking yourself down and building yourself back up. And I definitely went through that over the course of the months leading up to it. And, you know, you learn a lot about yourself. You have to sort of become humble in the process. I remember writing my first draft and thinking how great it was and how great I was for doing it so quickly, and then everybody redlining it and breaking it down and really helping you get to the heart of who you are and what your message is. And then also, of course, doing it in the time frame, you know, making sure that it's not that much longer than 10 minutes, because that's the ones that are most viewed and that's how you have to deliver your message, and it has to be memorized. So there were a lot of things that went into that that really took over my life for a number of months, to be honest.
Did you memorize it word for word?
I did memorize it word for word, yes.
How did you do that?
I mean, you know, you kind of have themes, I guess, and you kind of know your stories, and I had different sections. It was very, very difficult to do, and I think it's challenging because you don't want to sound rehearsed, and you also have to have little things you wouldn't expect. For example, because a lot of my story had to do with medical challenges, there were things that I had to word a certain way for legal and liability purposes with the TEDx organization, where they would literally say to me, if you say this instead of that, we won't be able to put it on the virtual platform for you because there could be a danger of liability. So you really, really had to be careful with your word choice, your timing, and just practice, practice, practice. And it's hard because it's a very emotional topic and you want the emotion to come out. Like I said, you don't want to sound rehearsed. So it's more for me, it was going through the themes and the stories and having those sections in my head. But it was not an easy process.
I did a commencement speech at my college, Westchester University, years ago, and I had somebody who proofread it and gave me some suggestions and, you know, all of that. I did memorize my speech. I was still able to have the papers in front of me, but I said, if they blow away, if it's windy out and the papers blow away, I want to be able to continue. But having those papers in front of me was like a security blanket.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, you know, when I used to do jury trials, I mean, you learn very quickly that if you try to memorize and then you don't know what's going to happen at trial, things happen spur of the moment. And for your closing argument, you know, you want that eye contact. You want to be impactful. You want people to remember the story you're telling. So, yeah, of course. I mean, I have students now where they just asked me today for the presentation next week, can we have a note card? And of course, things like that are super helpful. But you don't want to have them as a crutch where you're looking down and you're not connecting with your audience. So as long as you can do that, I think you'll be successful.
You said students. You teach at the Wharton School.
Yes, this is my first semester.
And how is it going?
It's going great. I mean, it's a big learning curve. And, you know, of course, for anybody, adding something like that on to your already busy schedule is a challenge. Spending most of my Sundays now preparing for this class. But the students are amazing. And I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot about timing and connecting with people who are much younger than me and all of that good stuff. So, I mean, I love it so far.
What's the class you teach?
Business communication.
You're speaking locally at an event on the main line.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I have a number of events lined up, all connected with the title I just received, that's Mrs. Classic Universe. So one of the things I think that came out of my accident for me personally is just having been given a second chance, I really try to challenge myself and just live life to the fullest every day. And I like to do things that are out of the box. Sometimes they're crazy things, but they're always interesting. And so last year, I was given this opportunity to try out for Mrs. Classic Pennsylvania. And for those not familiar with what that is, every state and actually internationally, the Mrs. Classic is over 40. So basically, I got involved with it because about 40% of the competition was based on your message and your platform. So even though I'm not a pageant girl, never did pageants, this was something I thought, well, this might be interesting. I'll have a larger way to spread my message and things that are important to me. And why not? Why shouldn't I do a pageant? I'm turning 50 next year. I'm plus size. I have a lot of confidence. But at the same time, you know, this was like a new challenge. I'm not a pageant girl. I've never done this. And, you know, just challenging the idea of what does it mean to be a pageant queen? Why can't you be a pageant queen at almost 50? You know, why do you have to be a certain size or weight or background to be a pageant queen? What does that mean? So I got involved in doing this pageant, and long story short, I ended up winning the whole world finals in Vegas. So now I'm Mrs. Classic Universe for 2022-2023, and I'm representing women across the world who are over 40. And it was quite an experience to be the only non-pageant woman that was competing in this pageant. So yeah, I'm hosting a number of events. Some of them I'm hosting. I'm talking to different partners and nonprofits for my responsibilities for the next year of my reign. And one of them is coming up in October at Autograph Restaurant. It's called Ghouls Night Out. And, you know, it's towards the Halloween. So it's a play on girls or women's night out. And it's by the Fearless Femmes organization, which is part of the Fearless Restaurants family that runs Autograph and a number of other restaurants in the region. We're going to have a number of women-owned businesses, some brands that are very close to my heart will be there, and I will be speaking about a little bit about my journey and why I did the pageant, what my platform involves, what I'm going to focus on for my reign. Tracy Davidson, who's a friend, will be introducing me from NBC 10, so I'm very excited about that. And we'll have an opportunity just to connect and network and shop and learn all about businesses that are there, and there's some informal modeling, I believe, by Van Cleef. So it should be a great night.
How do people get information and tickets for the event?
So you can go to the Autograph website under their events, and that will lead you to Eventbrite, and they can purchase tickets through that link.
If you could give our listeners one bit of advice, what would you say to them? It can be about anything.
I would say don't limit yourself. I think the accident was sort of a game changer for me in realizing this, and just other people that I deal with in life and clients. People feel like when you get to a certain age or you're at a certain station or, you know, I have too many responsibilities or I couldn't possibly go back to school, all those things that go through people's mind where they second guess themselves. I would say don't limit yourself. There's always, every day can bring a new challenge, and don't let anything stop you. I'm a nearly 50-year-old pageant queen and have new challenges that are in front of me. And I told myself I'd do a TEDx, and I did it. And anybody out there can do what they want to do if they're willing to work for it. And never limit yourself. There's too many people outside that'll do that for you.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For more information about Jennifer and her business, you can go to purposefulnetworking.com. And if you'd like to see Jennifer speak, you can join her at Autograph in Wayne on Thursday, October 20th. If you missed any part of today's interview, it will be available as a podcast tomorrow morning on our website, 957benfm.com. Thank you so much for joining me today and every Sunday. I'm Kathy Romano. Have a great rest of your weekend.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.